All right, hey, welcome to Matt.
And Matt.
NFL chat. It's here we are, week nine, going into week nine, middle of week nine. We just had the Thursday night game last night. Weren't on last week, sorry guys. I had to tap on the helmet, bit exhausted. I had to, you know, we were metaphorically dodging 300-pound linemen for
a whole, like, two and a half quarters.
Oh, 2.5 quarters, man. And then we ran to, like, 15 yards. It was hard.
It was very tiring.
It was tiring, man.
Yeah, I mean, I was just exhausted.
You know, we could have lied to you and just told you, you know, that our hip that kept us out for 4 weeks was playing up again, and that's why I needed the break on the sideline. That could have been a reason, but, you know, we just feel honesty is the best policy, isn't that right, Matt?
That's exactly right, and I think that's what we should do going forward. In fact, if anything, I'm ready to sit on the bench if I have to now.
Yeah. I think we should just get Joe Flacco hosting this podcast.
And to be honest, there is a chance that it would be a higher quality product at the end of the day.
You know, he's at least going to sling it. He's going to be slinging it to some sort of accuracy.
Well, it's not that we don't take swings, it's just that sometimes we hit on about, what, at this point, less than 50% of our shots.
Yeah, was this intro a swing or a hit? I'm hard to tell. I feel like
I think it started okay and we really got off the track.
We got off the track. The metaphor kind of died out. We're talking about Anthony Richardson, if you can't tell. Benched by the Colts. Really in a moment that really just endeared him to the everyman.
And sort of did the exact opposite to every single football head in the world.
And like, the Colts fan base as a whole.
They went from Andrew Luck to whatever the fuck has been going on there.
Anthony, like, I need a rest, Richardson.
It's... Oh, I feel sorry for Colts fans because, like, I think the biggest travesty about this, though, is that they spent the number 4 pick on him.
Mm.
And they knew, like, it's, look at the measurables. He is big, he is strong, he has got an absolute howitzer for an arm, but he is a very raw product.
Yeah.
And with a raw product, it takes a while. They drafted Anthony Richardson to be the Indianapolis version of Josh Allen.
Mm.
And over the first little chunk of their careers, the numbers are shockingly similar. It's just
except that completion percentage. That's still
that complete.
I mean, I think Josh Allen was around 50 to 50. He might have been 52 his rookie year.
It wasn't good, but no, you're right. Yeah. It was a bit better, and there was a little bit more like promise in terms of accuracy. But like, they are giving up on him this early. It's like, we're going to spend all of this draft capital. We're going to, you know, spend all of this equity on this player.
Yeah.
And not ride the highs and lows. And I understand that there is a huge amount of limitations, but the understanding was that we're going to fucking suck for a couple of years while he gets the wheels turning.
Well, I think their big mistake. I think the story of Anthony Richardson and, like, all thoughts and I think the problem with Anthony Richardson, I don't think he's a write-off. I think it's way too early to write him off as an NFL quarterback. I think this whole incident got blown out of proportion. I think the biggest reason he got benched was the media backlash and the fan backlash.
I think that's probably fair.
I feel like the Colts almost benching him, and also probably maybe that locker, I feel like it would have played really bad in the locker room. I think this could be a big locker room benching as well.
Yeah, I think, like, you can understand, I was exhausted from a wide receiver who's just run 3 go routes. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can understand, like, hey, I just need a second here. You know, but
there's other ways to do it. There's, like, I'm sure, like, that's the thing. Like, the thing is, you've never seen an NFL quarterback ever do that.
Because it's not the thing to be done.
Like, Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton, Michael Vick, the running quarterback has been a thing for a while now, and they never, ever did that. And
even Pat Mahomes, who doesn't run, you know, he only runs a couple of times a game.
Yeah.
But I've never seen him just be like, yo, I need a breather.
But the thing is, if he had that veteran sort of smarts, he would have known to be like, oh, nah, it's my hip, it's my ankle,
yeah,
it's
something
my knee.
Felt off.
It's like, oh, I need to just, you know, for a play, just go to the tent, just get, you know, suck a couple big ones in and I'll be back out here. Or the wheelful would be like, no, we got to get time out here, guys. Even, you know, even if it, I don't know what stage of the game they were in. I think it was third quarter or something, so I don't think it would have been the end of the world to call a timeout. But
I mean, your timeouts are pretty valuable.
They are, but that being said, it's just, I think they're going to look back on the Colts and how they've handled Anthony Richardson, and it's going to be the complete how not to handle a raw rookie quarterback. I think they made the first mistake was having him start last year.
I agree.
First game, round one, I think you brought in Gardner Minshew as a solid veteran. I think you should have given him the keys for that whole season. I think if that you do that, you not only stop him from getting, you preserve him so he doesn't get injured, so you can give him a full year to work on his throwing mechanics and his and everything in his game, so that, you know.
Yeah, rather than getting onto the field, immediately getting injured.
Shoulder injury too. Like, because you meant, like, there was no way he could have physically developed as a quarterback last year at all after that shoulder injury.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they really threw him into the deep end without checking that he could swim.
Yeah, I'm going to pause this real quick. All right, we're back. Sorry, we're back. That was me. I can't manage my own household. Anyway, Matt, you're saying Richardson's shoulder injury.
So, I think that it raises a larger question in general about quarterback development.
Yeah.
In the NFL at all. Like, because I'm not saying that there is a quarterback development problem, because we have some incredible, like, quarterbacks of this generation. So, like, yeah, you know, the way that I know that this is always the go-to example, but that Reed developed Mahomes.
Yeah.
The way that Lamar had most of a season to develop in that system before he saw the field.
Mm.
The way that, like, you know, Joe Burrow, we all talk about how badly the Bengals have handled Joe Burrow's talent, but just because of his talent in reading, like, Zach Taylor has helped develop him into an NFL quarterback. So, it's not that development doesn't exist in the NFL, it does, but I think that over the last few years, we're seeing a lot of quarterbacks be thrown into the fire and then discarded, and they're not given much of a chance to grow. But we're also seeing a lot of quarterbacks elevated to that level before I think that they are actually there.
Mm.
So, you know, players like Zach Wilson, who I think that had he have been a third rounder, a fourth rounder, and they actually put a bit of sweat equity into trying to develop him into a Jalen Hurts, Russell Wilson-style project quarterback to begin with that excels, you know, they're better than expectations and they're cheaper, so you can build around them more.
Mm.
Zach Wilson should never have been a first-round pick. He's got some measurables, but there was, outside of that COVID season, no reason to believe that he was a number one pick.
Mm.
And or a first round pick. He wasn't a number one, sorry. And that entire draft class, well, that was Trevor Lawrence's year, wasn't it?
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, Trey Lance. It was just a mess of a draft class. I think you raise a really interesting point of just that being the COVID year, and like how were they even able to scout players that year?
Like, they weren't. So, like, it was, there were a much smaller selection of college teams playing. Not all of the players were playing on those teams.
Mm.
And, you know, universities like BYU that Zach Wilson went to were beaten up on scrubs.
Yeah. And then I think, like, Trevor Lawrence was just assumed to be the number one pick. Like, he was probably a rightful number one pick. He had a really good college career.
He got an incredible resume before the NFL. And yeah. Then
to be fair, he was on a great team. That Clemson team of 2017 to 2020 was unreal.
Absolutely. But, again, before the NFL, showed some incredible flashes.
Well, in his freshman year, I remember he in the national championship, basically single-handedly won them that game over an Alabama team that was insane. Like, he ran for like 100 and something yards, and he threw for like 3 touchdowns. But again, a lot of that was just that whole Clemson team was just insane. And so I think, like, I remember if you go through that Clemson team, especially like with like D linemen, O linemen, wide receivers, so many of them are in the league.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Cornerbacks, DB, you know, just the whole team. Like, they just that effective. I think Dabo Sweeney at that time was just recruiting like a motherfucker. Right before NIL came in, and you actually had to, you know, you can recruit by selling snake oil, essentially. You had to actually show them something up front. But, yeah, Trevor Lawrence was probably the only legitimate quarterback. But, and then I just think it was one of those years that's just like, okay, quarterback's going first. Who's the second best quarterback? He's going number two. When it's just like, well, maybe there was just a complete massive drop-off from number one to number two that year, and people couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, it's... I also think that so much more of the skill is going into other positions now. Like, wide receivers are more skilled coming into the league than I think we've ever seen them.
Yeah.
They are, like, which actually leads us pretty well into our next topic, which is Garrett Wilson.
Well, before we get to Garrett Wilson, we'll get to Garrett Wilson soon, because he's amazing. I just wanted to touch on the other side of the Anthony Richardson drama. Joe Flacco just won't die.
Hey.
Joe Flacco... just,
you're right. We need to give Flacco his flowers.
Like, I mean, as a longtime Ravens fan, I'm very familiar with Joe Flacco, and I was talking to Matt about this earlier when I was talking about just, you know, Lamar Jackson when he came into the Ravens. Of just those last 3 years of Flacco at the Ravens was some of the most depressing football you could watch. Like, our defense was solid, our offense was solid, but we were, the ceiling was 10-6 and a first round exit in the playoffs. Like, that was the ceiling with Joe Flacco, and it still might be the ceiling. That's the crazy thing, because the Browns last year were 10-6 and lost in the first round of the playoffs, and that might be, or the 10-7 or something, whatever, I don't know, 17 games, I hate it, we all do. It's just, the maths is so much harder.
I know, and
it's 12-5, it doesn't make sense.
Everything used to split so neatly into fours.
The 16, you know, 16 by four, you had four teams, four divisions. And
everything was perfect.
It was, sorry, just the tism was risen there. But, just get it to 18 already, because then at least we can divide by three.
And then you can have an even amount of home and away games.
Just don't give us a prime number. Like, just anything other than a prime number. Anyway, so, Joe Flacco, the GOAT. Anyway, Garrett Wilson. Another long line of receivers in New York making outstanding catches on lackluster teams.
Oh, my God. Isn't that the perfect comparison? Yeah. And, you know, on a team that is an absolute fucking tire fire. And just making an incredible one-handed catch over somebody in a game that... at least Garrett Wilson won his catch game.
Yeah. Because wasn't that OBJ catch game? Wasn't that in garbage time in the fourth quarter, pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, yeah. And they did not win that game.
No.
But, you know, that Garrett Wilson catch really spurred something in that offense. And I think that...
like, it was a go-ahead score. They were down 10-7, mm-hmm. and then they went... their offense was doing nothing that whole first half.
And what a spectacular catch. I'll be the first person to say, like, I've been shitting on the Jets all season, and it's not going to stop. I'm going to continue to do that. I don't believe in them. I do believe in Garrett Wilson.
Yeah.
Like... what a player, what a play, what a catch. He absolutely shot up my wide receiver rankings in my books. Like, he just absolutely incredible. And it's just, as his targets have increased, his production has gone exponentially better.
Yeah.
If Aaron Rodgers can pull this together, which I'm not saying I believe that he can do at this age with his lack of mobility, but if he can do it, a huge part of that will be Garrett Wilson.
Well, just watching that game, like, because Devontae Adams had a big game too. He had like 80 yards and a touchdown. He went out for like 10 minutes with a concussion check or something like that. And, to see Devontae Adams, like, I think Garrett Wilson has gone in there with... I think Devontae Adams coming in has lit a fire under Garrett Wilson.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, if he didn't take it by the bull by the horns and, you know, potentially risk getting relegated to a number two receiver with Devontae coming in there, as, you know, that was going to have massive detriment on his career. Like, because that's the difference between him getting one of those crazy-ass fucking... $30 million a year receiver contracts that are going around at the moment and getting 3 years, $15 million a year.
Absolutely.
It's a huge difference, not just in terms of financial, but in terms of where he ranks in the league. Because now, if he keeps this going, which I think undoubtedly, like, how does Aaron Rodgers, like, with that history he's got with Devontae, after seeing that crazy-ass catch, how does he not have all the trust in the world in that man?
Like he needed. If there is going to be anything that's going to build chemistry with your, you know, with your quarterback,
yeah,
it is going to be, by the way, I plucked this out of the sky like a gift from an angel. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot fawn enough over that. And that shot where his like fucking legs are split and he's sort of got this ridiculous stretch in a like almost inhuman crescent shape grabbing the ball out of the air. It was incredible, man.
Yeah, we'll ignore the offensive pass interference just before it, and also the fact that somehow you can divide your shin bone into two when it comes into touching inbounds. I don't know if you noticed, but the lower shin landed...
As a Ravens fan, I can imagine this is a touchy subject for you, actually.
The lower shin landed inbounds, but the upper part of the shin... Maybe at a different point, but I would argue almost simultaneously hit the out of bounds line. But you know, it's all right. They went, took that upstairs, and clearly the NFL were like, nope, we need that highlight
because that is awesome.
Yeah, we need that highlight. But we can't have the Chiefs lose the opening game of the season.
Oh my! But that catch, yep. Just. You're right, though. Like, I mean, technically,
yep.
That wasn't a touch. That was a fucking touchdown. And I had they taken that off the board, I think there would have been, like...
Riot.
A revolt.
And then if the Jets lose that game and they took that off the board...
No, I think for everybody's health and safety, that was the right decision, keeping that on the board.
Yeah, I'm just saying, apparently, like, we learned last weekend, which we didn't get to cover, that, what was the game? I can't remember the game, but the same foot twice in bounds is not the same as 2 feet.
Oh?
I can't remember that game. I'm drawing a blank. You guys listening will tell us, but there was a game, I can't remember, guy caught it in the end zone, he hopped on his left and then landed again on his left and then his right went out of bounds. That's basically what happened. I'm drawing a blank, but, so we've learned that 1 foot twice is not the same as 2 feet, mm-hmm. But that also you can halve your own shin bone in half. And as long as the bottom half hits inbounds while the top half is hitting out, that's fine.
It's fine, absolutely, no problem at all. But Isaiah Likely having slightly too big a feet is not okay. That's a genetic advantage, man.
Look, all right. If we're gonna start talking genetic advances, you're starting to sound a little bit like Leo and Django Unchained. But it's. He's got big feet, alright, and... Okay, alright, we'll get over it. It's alright, we'll see him in the playoffs and probably lose in a more depressing fashion. But, what are we talking about? Yeah, Garrett Wilson, but the Jets, man. I haven't written him off yet. I just had a peek at the schedule and, like, you know, they've got the Dolphins twice, who we will get onto very soon. They've got the Jags, the best two teams. They've got to play the Bills again and the Rams. They're sitting 3-6. If they can close out, finish 9-8, 10-7, and they're hot with those players.
I think that's too big of an ask.
Do I dare bring up New York Giants 2007, 2008? I mean, what was that year? The Patriots year, 2007?
You know, I have been saying repeatedly on the podcast that he is not Peyton Manning.
Are you joking?
Is he Eli?
I will not stand for that level of disrespect. Aaron Rodgers is Eli fucking Manning. I almost want to end this podcast right now. Aaron.
I knew they would get a rise out of you, man. I knew it. Sorry.
God, shucking shit takes are us over here.
Oh, you're the one who opened that door for that pop shot.
Well, yeah, because he's going to win that second Super Bowl this year. That's how I come back, you know, Aaron Rodgers. No, he's not, because Lamar's winning it.
Well, you're getting into a bit of a fucking take spider web here, man.
Look, okay, all I'm saying is every year I'm that guy that says four different teams are winning the Super Bowl, and just to, you know, spread the bets. It's like, you're on the roulette table, you know? You can put money on more than one number, guys, okay? As long as you're right on one of them, no one needs to know.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but the Jets, man, I think they can still do it. What I think is most likely to happen is they'll show flashes all year. They might get a big upset. They might tip the Bills over in that Week 17 game and finish 8-9 and miss out the playoffs, or 7-10.
I actually think you're on the nail there, mate. Like, because I think that's exactly right. Because you're going to have moments where Aaron Rodgers remembers he has Aaron Rodgers' right arm.
Yeah.
Which, when he does that, it's incredible.
Mm.
Because the other thing that we haven't talked about is he was appalling in the first half of that game.
Yeah.
He was not good. And then that spark from, you know, that spark from his receiver, Malachi Corley.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You can't be doing that, boy. Imagine if they lost that game with that happening and if that Garrett Wilson catch was called not a touchdown.
It would be the single most Jets defeat I've ever seen in my life. It would
be the most catastrophic thing to happen with a New York Jets since that day in September. But I don't know. That was unnecessary. That was super unnecessary.
It was funny.
It's funny, though. But come on, Matt. You don't need to make it about that.
No. Anyway, oh, my God.
That's basically, I'm at the point where my whole comedy hour is just going to be called 9/11. Like, it's just the amount of, like, just Easter eggs and fucking throwaways that I've just, anyway, that's unrelated. Come see it.
Matt Lilly, Bush did it.
No, it was actually the Saudi Arabian government. Different podcast. What are we talking about? Jets. I don't know. But at least the AFC East, man.
It is. It's really painful to talk about because I think that the Jets are in the driver's seat for second place in the AFC East.
But that's really, like, what are you fighting for there?
That's right. Like, it's
a harder schedule next season?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to use this as an opportunity to talk about my Dolphins.
Yeah, you may as well. Yeah.
The fact that we look like a completely different team with Tua on the field is the most infuriating thing in the world for me as a Dolphins fan, because I'm so happy that our offense is functional again. Like, we had a run game because they respected the pass.
Mm.
Which meant that we could get the run game established, meaning we could pass the ball.
Yeah.
Because we're a Shanahan-style offense. Everything is based off of that run.
Yes.
It is an incredibly frustrating thing for me as a Dolphins fan, because it is so clear to me the emotional impact of having Tua on the team. Because I love Tua as a player. Mm. I love what he does for the offense. When he is on the field, our offense looks pretty dynamic. Losing that game to the Cardinals hurt, but that was the moment that Kyler Murray got that first down at the end of the game. You knew that they were kicking a walk-off field goal. You didn't think it, you knew it.
Yeah.
And I came to terms with it just before the clock ticked down. It hurt, but, yeah, you know, first time Cardinals have won back-to-back since, I think it was 2021?
Yeah.
And, of course, it was against that Dolphins defense.
Which I think, interestingly enough, because, yeah, that was the year they started 8-0. But DeAndre Hopkins, did you see him in that press conference with the Chiefs, basically saying it's nice to be involved in meaningful football, that he hadn't had it since, yeah, that 8-0 run at the Cardinals, essentially.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
To be fair, he's allowed to take shots at those teams.
Yeah.
They weren't good, but he also decided that.
Well, it was looking... That Cardinals team was looking good when he joined it with Kyler. Like, there was still a bit of hype. Like, there still is... Kyler is still going to be a good quarterback, because I think he's actually, granted, he's had his ups and downs. I think they've stuck with him when they definitely should have, and he's looking good this year.
He is... The frustrating thing about Kyler is you never know what to expect with him, because there are going to be some games where he is the single most dynamic athlete on the field.
Yeah.
And then there are going to be games where you're watching and you're like, you can't see the field.
No. Literally, can't see over. Well, you go stand behind five men that are a foot taller than you across the board and see what you can see.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not blaming him for not being able to see. But it's like, you know, it's. You know, I'm only 5'8" myself, Matt.
Yeah.
You know, but you made me lose my train of thought for a second.
Sorry, I wasn't attacking you specifically. I was attacking the audience.
Oh, that's.
But yeah, Kyler, you know, like, but, don't know what you can get.
Yeah, but when he is, when he's got it going.
Yeah.
And when James Conner is playing like James Conner does, I know that I think I've had a good rant about James Conner before, but man, I love that football player.
Yeah.
He's just a fucking dude, man.
They're an interesting team though, man, because I think like that whole team plays like that though. Like their defense has had some performances this year that were just absolutely shocking. Against the Commanders, getting just blown out off the floor. Their offensive line has had performances this year where you're just like, how can an offense function behind that thing? But then they can pull it all together.
Yeah, it's...
That's, yeah. It's a frustrating team. I'd hate to be a Cardinals fan, or I'd like to be. It's hard to tell. But I think they're a team that needs to heavily... They have the weapons, they have the quarterback, they have, you know... They need to heavily invest in the trenches. I think that's where they need to really invest over these next few years.
Yeah, give Kyler time to do what Kyler does.
Yeah.
Like, he's incredible on the move, but there's a difference between being on the move and running for your fucking life.
Exactly.
You know, give him a chance to scramble around and see what he wants to do on his terms.
Yeah.
Rather than having... You know, just throwing a name out there, Max Crosby chasing after him.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've had dreams that are less scary than that concept.
Yeah. Yeah, Max Crosby just chasing you down like he's chasing that last rock a crack. Just, you ever think about that? Because, you know, he's obviously, him and like Darren Waller had that whole thing about them being like sober and all that stuff.
Mm.
Could you imagine, like, do you ever think he's like, do you think... So that scene in Happy Gilmore, do you think he's just lining up on the edge of the line and like just picturing that quarterback as a bottle of bourbon, or is that a bit too offensive? Should I potentially timestamp that and cut that joke out?
You don't have a good reputation of remembering the timestamps.
No, I'm not going to cut that out. But that's
no.
We swing and we miss. It's all right.
It's just
I might just tap. I'm tapping the helmet. Matt, you go.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, we got on a big tangent. I was talking about the Dolphins.
Yes, yes.
Just to circle back there about how having Tua on the team is a real double-edged sword, because, you know, I love him being there, but there is, like, you can't have Tua there without talking about the health concerns.
Yeah.
And when those health concerns become a concern... It is incredibly emotionally demoralizing for the entire team.
Mm.
And you can see the lethargy. It becomes completely uninspired football on both sides of the football.
Mm.
Because because everyone in that room knows we're starting Tyler Huntley. We're starting Skylar Thompson.
It's just a quarterback called Skylar. You don't even need to go any further.
Yeah. You know, Kyler with the S for sucks. Like, it's brutal, man. Like, and you can see the deflation in the entire team. The level of effort drops. And the most infuriating thing about Tua coming back and that offense looking good is they look good because there was effort.
Mm.
And... That's the double-edged sword that I'm struggling with. Not that I, you know, I think that Tua absolutely has the right to make whatever decision he wants, but I'm terrified for my team if something does happen again. Because what the fuck are we going to do? Like,
I don't, I think you're digging yourself into a bit. I think he's acting like, I think that's the case for most teams. What do the Bills do without Josh Allen? Well, Josh Allen has his career-ending injury next week. What are the Bills going to do?
Yeah, I hear you, but also, you're not going into every game thinking that at any given snap,
yeah,
Josh Allen is more likely than any other player to be injured.
Yeah.
In such a way that will catastrophically affect not only him, but the entire team.
Yes, but then you double-edge that sword. You've got a guy who's going to be, as long as he's playing and he's healthy, a top five quarterback in terms of accuracy in the league every year he plays.
But the big caveat to that is every year he plays. And he has had one fully healthy season.
Yeah. Again, I think you guys just need to change. I think the big thing you guys need to do is you need to just commit to every year that at least that first or second pick in your draft is an offensive lineman.
Absolutely.
Every single year.
Absolutely.
Every single year.
It has been one of Miami's biggest problems for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
Like, Teron Armstead, when he's on the field, is awesome.
Mm.
We draft offensive linemen quite well, actually.
Yeah.
We just don't keep them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, Laramie Tunsil was awesome as a left tackle for a while there.
And he's still going, and he probably will for another 5 years.
And
he fell to you guys because of, honestly, that's another person we should put on the Wall of Fame.
Absolutely. just a shrine of Ricky Williams. And it's always, you know, Dolphins, isn't it?
You know what's crazy about that draft? I was watching it as that was happening live, ripping a bong. It was just like, it was this weird moment of just like, I was just like,
did you have the whole mask on as well? Just going for it.
Like, well, because I think I'm the same age as Laramie Tunsil. Because I think I remember being like, God, he's like 21, 22, ripping a bong. I'm 21, 22, ripping a bong. And like, I know he's a little bit older than me. So it might have been like 18, 19.
He's my age.
Yeah, he's your age. But I was just like, God damn, man. And it's like that lung capacity.
Oh,
for a big man.
Just,
they should have shot up to top three after that came out.
Immediately. Oh, just what an absolute trooper.
Anyway.
Oh, looking like Darth Vader. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Fuck.
But yeah, I think the Dolphins, like, if you, every draft for the next 10 years, if you've got to the end of the second round and you haven't drafted an offensive lineman, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to commit to it. You just need to be like, all right, we may have to, our defense, we're going to be, our weapons, you know, we may
our
have
weapons
to
are sorted. Our weapons are fucking sorted. We need to focus on the O-line because, you know, we've got a really stacked running back room.
Mm.
We've got great receivers.
Yeah.
We don't have anybody to block the pass rush.
Mm.
If we can't get the ball to our playmakers, we can't make plays.
Mm.
We need to block the pass rush. We need to protect. Like, if we are going to have Tua, we need to protect him.
Yeah, yeah.
And we aren't doing that in any capacity. We're not protecting him from himself, and we're not protecting him from the pass rush. And that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Especially given the dire consequences of not protecting Tua.
Well, it's crazy because you can contrast that with a team that does heavily prioritize those men in the trenches on both sides of the ball and has done for a long time and seems to just keep churning out offensive linemen even when two or three of them are picked up by other teams in free agency every year. And that's my Ravens.
Every year, man.
Every year. And like, you
it's why they are consistently a good team. If you can win the battle in the trenches, your playmakers can create space.
I know. Yeah.
Like, we have so many incredible skill players all over the league. It's the trenches that the differences are made. Because a game is often decided by a few yards. It's not decided, you know, a few yards on third down and third down percentages.
It's crazy. But when I look at the Ravens, though, that offensive and defensive line is made up of a lot of mid and late round picks.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only, like, first-round pick on our... Oh, no, we got Lindenbaum, who's a first-round pick a couple of years ago, the center.
And I think Roddy Stanley was a first-round pick years ago. So I'm kind of just disproving that on the offensive line. And then our new right tackle, who's been going gangbusters, was like a high second-round pick this last year. But
so, you know, we have invested early in the offensive line in that way. But
and
like
it's paying dividends all the time.
But then the defensive line, Justin Matabuike, he was a third-round pick. A lot of those guys, they're just picking big bodies that are still there late in the round. That's kind of like the ethos. It's like, oh, you're 300 pounds plus and you're available. Come on down. We'll teach you how to play. But, yeah.
We'll improve that footwork and get you absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. But all of that being said, and all of those big bodies, and all of that great drafting, and all of that great work for a franchise that has been one of the most consistently successful over the last 10, 15 years, it was nothing when it came down to Jameis Winston.
Oh, Jameis.
And Cedric Tillman and the Cleveland Browns. This past weekend. And you know what, Matt? I'll start this off by saying I knew this was going to happen. If I was here last week and we were able to cover in detail that tragic injury to Deshaun Watson. All right, Browns fan. Anyway, just that was crazy, man. Yeah, their fans were booing him.
I have never seen that before.
The dude
in
was in agony on all fours on the ground getting booed.
And you know what?
Yep.
He fucking deserved it.
It's hard to argue, man. And it's like it's also hard to feel bad for him when he's got guaranteed, regardless, he can sit on his ass.
Forever.
All the massages he wants for the next 3 years and still get paid fucking 40 plus million a year.
Yes. Come.
He is basically going to be the richest beneficiary on God's green earth.
No, that's the royal family.
Yeah, are they even pulling in $40 million a year anymore? I don't know. Oh. I don't know, actually. I think the Vatican's got all that money. but Deshaun Watson, after getting booed, and then do you see all the players stand up for him? Do you see the worst one?
Miles Garrett. Oh my God. Oh, he's been standing for all of his college career and most of his professional career.
Does he not realize like the allegations were like from like the entire period he was the starting quarterback of the Texans? Like it was like a 3 or 4 year stretch there. And then the recent allegation is after those allegations came forward. So it's not like you could argue that he just never learned his lesson. Anyway, but Jameis Winston, though, I knew with the power of God behind him, you know, you're like, not to get all religion, you know, no offense to any Christians out there, but you're like, when you ever see like a guy who's like fully like going full evangelical on it, full on like, full like he believes the spirit is within him. He fully believe, you know, not, you know, whenever you see a guy that righteous, you know, it's a short-term fuse. I'm not trying to say he's entered himself in the MVP stats, but you've got at least, we'll call it 72 hours. You don't have to go that time frame. That's biblical, but you've got 72 hours of just unrivaled power and precision and that was Jameis Winston. He just transferred. He had God on his side. God was guiding those balls into those wide open receivers' hands.
Just insane, man.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, I'm saying that and I'm just like, I saw those gaps. I saw Cedric Tillman being 10 yards ahead of his man in the end zone when Jameis hit him. But, you know, it was all Jameis. It was all God. I'm not, you know, it's not like my Ravens secondary is the worst in the league.
It's not like you are massively missing Mike McDonald.
It's not like somehow with Marlon Humphrey. Well, we also lost Geno Stone, our safety, who wasn't even, he played 1 year for us last year. He was kind of came up and then he's gone. We lost a safety. We've still got Marlon Humphrey, who has been making plays. Like, that Buccaneers game could have looked a lot uglier if he didn't get those two picks. True,
and you know Kyle Hamilton is still a beast.
Despite
dropping that wide open interception.
That's the other thing. We would have won that game if he did that.
And you know the hardest thing about that is what? The hardest thing about saying that is because like
that was the most. Oh, here you go. Sorry.
Is that I think that Kyle Hamilton is arguably the best, one of the best safeties in the league.
I think he could be. Yeah, I think he is too.
He's everywhere. He is awesome. He is always just causing freaking havoc.
I think you give him like a few more years because he's always seemed like a kind of guy that, not calling him dumb, but that the IQ side of things, like safety is a very demanding intellectual position, but it just seemed like he was just prone to the odd dumb play.
Yeah.
He was just prone to the odd mental being in the wrong place. I think, and I think that's what he was as a rookie. He showed flashes of brilliance, but he made a lot of dumb plays as a rookie. And then since then, he's just cut the dumb plays down every season. But they're still there a little bit. So I think in like 4 or 5 years, he's just going to be. But the problem is, that's the thing. That's why we had the players. It just has to be scheme. It has to be, I think whoever, I don't even know. It's just somehow we are leaving third round, second year receivers who've only had 200 total yards in their entire career, 10 yards open in the fourth quarter in the end zone.
It's
just things that just don't make sense. It's like we got the contrast of like the most unstoppable nightmare of an offense in the league.
Speaking of which, actually, you guys made a very interesting decision at the trade deadline.
Yeah, we did.
You your biggest glaring need as a team is actually the same glaring need that the Chiefs have.
Yeah.
That a lot of teams have at the moment, which is you need a corner.
I think the problem with that is they're hard to come by. I think corner, people are locking them up. No one's trading their corners. Someone like Patrick Surtain just getting paid by the Broncos. They're not getting.
As he well should.
Hell yeah. That Broncos secondary. That's the secondary we fucking need, the Ravens, and we're going up against them this week. So
that's a secondary every team in the league needs, man.
Yeah. But it's just to have just. The best offense, Deontay Johnson. Well, I don't think it's a terrible move. I think it's a depth move because I think
I don't understand the move because whenever the Ravens underperform, the big thing that you hear is why didn't you feed Derrick Henry?
Yeah.
So,
well, we need to keep those players out of the box to make Derrick Henry and Lamar just fucking even more punishing. And I think with our receivers, we've got Zay Flowers who's a solid. I don't know if he's ever going to be considered a top 10 or top 20 receiver, but he's a solid
number one
receiver at the moment. And then you got Rashad Bateman, who's been playing very well this year, but his injury history is about as bad as it gets, if we're being real. And then outside of that, a third receiver is Aguilar. So I think it's a depth pickup, if anything. We kind of do need a more solid number two receiver than Bateman. Bateman's a good deep threat. I just don't trust him to be there for more than 10 games a year.
I think that's fair.
But I think just nobody's letting go of good corners. And I think it's such a... I think teams play so many... in the secondary, I think it's hard to just drag and drop a safety or a cornerback into a new team mid-season. Receiver, if it's a similar style offense, not so much. But that being said, the Panthers are not a similar style offense. They're not an offense.
I mean, that's an accurate way of putting it. They are sort of the human embodiment of tires stuck in the mud. It is pretty painful to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know,
And every move they make only seems to entrench them further into that.
I think it's at the point, Andy Dalton just can't avoid a car crash at this point, is the problem. It's at the point where, I think we need to look at the dash cam of that footage of that accident and see if, who was actually at fault here, if Andy didn't really just place a gamble on his family's life to just not have to start in a few more games for the Panthers.
A car crash is safer than playing behind that Panthers offensive line.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't even be surprised if he just, drove it into his own, garage wall and then just, hit his wrist with a hammer or something. It was just I'm fucked, I can't play anymore, guys.
It's all right, kids, we can make it through Christmas.
He made a business decision. Yeah. Just get those last, type of injury that he should at least still be back the last two or three games with. Hopefully they're playing other teams that have given up as well and he can get another backup contract somewhere else next year.
Yeah, just anywhere that isn't the Panthers.
Exactly. But yeah, anyway, that's the Ravens. I'm kind of writing it off as a one-off loss, but we just need to sort out that fucking secondary.
There aren't teams that don't have a major hole in them at this point of the year. You know, and every team that we thought was pretty complete is pretty injured as well. Like, the IR has been very overlogged this year.
Well, one team is dealing with all of that. It's still somehow 7-0.
Kansas City. Them getting D-Hop was...
depressing.
Yeah, because it was the perfect move.
It was.
And Brett Veach is once again showing why he's one of the best GMs in the league. Because they paid next to nothing for him. Yeah, it was a fifth round pick that turns into a fourth round pick if they make the Super Bowl. So, a fourth round pick.
I hope you're wrong. But yeah. Yeah.
They are sleepwalking to 7-0 at the moment. And they are just... I watched that Chiefs game, like, you know, it was Labor Day for us here in New Zealand. So, like, he looked like he was toying with the team, man.
And Kelsey had a big game, so he's back. Like, he's going to be humming by the end of the season. And they're going to have Kelsey and D-Hop, and then Xavier Worthy's just going to be going deep with their third-string cornerbacks, and he's going to get open like 3 times a game, and, you know, yeah. Pat's going to find him every fucking time.
Hollywood Brown probably will make it back onto the field by the end of the season.
You're just going to have Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy on either side going deep and opening up the entire middle of the field for D-Hop and Kelsey just to take any pass they want.
And then Pacheco will be back. So you have Pacheco and Kareem Hunt to act as a Thunder-Lightning combo. They're painfully well built. They are, like, as everyone's saying, it's like Mahomes hasn't had great numbers. He's played pretty all right, though. Like, he's made the plays that are important. He's making a boneheaded play every game. But he's also doing something every game to make sure they fucking win.
You know what is a little bit of a silver lining?
Mm-hmm.
For those Kansas City fans. For those long-suffering Chiefs fans that we all hate that are getting the best football we're ever going to see, probably ever, in their team. You know what gives me a little bit of hope? That there is karma and that the universe is, you know, fair.
What's that, man?
They're talking about giving Kansas City a WNBA franchise. That's all. So, yeah.
You are a bad man.
I'm just... You know, the world, it's a cycle. It spins, you know, swings and roundabouts, you know. You know, the grass isn't always greener, guys. That's all I'm saying.
It's just going to be another team that Patrick Mahomes owns, you know.
He's going to have to financially support as well. So,
He owns part of
both of the men's and women's Major League Soccer team there.
So he's got, yeah, he's the Major League Soccer teams. He's got the Raiders. He's got
Has he got the Raiders? I thought he. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he owns. Yeah. The Chargers, the Broncos, currently the Ravens.
At this point, most of the NFL, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, they had to get, like, Brady had to officially buy a team now that he's out of the league. I think, like...
Oh, yeah.
I think
Tom Brady's a minority owner of the Raiders, and Patrick Mahomes is the majority.
You know how his last contract was, like, 10 years, $450 million? I think his next one's going to be, like, 5 years, $100 million, and 20% stake in the franchise or something.
Oh,
it's going to have to be.
Like, I can honestly see him... like, you know, as soon as he retires, basically being like, I don't want to go on the box. I got this voice. What I do want is to own a team and continue to be a thorn in everyone's side forever.
Yeah.
He is, man, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he's so fucking awesome.
Fucking hate him so much. Anyway,
we should probably close this out just very quickly talking about an NFC team because it's been very AFC heavy today.
Yeah, we have.
And a team that I sneaky think all of a sudden are they a lock for the playoffs? Are they probably going to win their division? And that's the Rams, man. Like the LA Rams, now that... every time Puka's off the field, I forget how good a player he is.
Oh, he's
good. And then I watch him play, and I'm like, what the fuck is this guy? Why is he open all the time?
How did he fall to the fourth round?
How did McVay get him as well?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's the perfect marriage of scheme and player. He is just, he's so good. And having him and Kopp back, all of a sudden Stafford has something to target and goes off.
Did you see that touchdown to Kopp where he, like, just slipped the lineman who was, like, should have... Like, that lineman would be watching that film and just being like, oh, how did I not wrap him the fuck up?
Yeah, just...
And it's just... And then he just throws a dart to Kopp in the back of the end zone.
Stafford is just... He's such a fascinating quarterback to talk about because, like, he really spent a lot of time with a massive amount of, like, unearned irrelevance.
Yeah.
Because he is so much more talented than the teams that he was on.
Mm.
Those Lions teams were generally not good.
They weren't good at all. They were terrible. They were a curse. You know, I think I'm not, you know, I'm a pretty realist when it comes to life. I don't tend to believe too much stuff, but I do believe the Lions were cursed.
They had to have been right.
Like, no, the entire time, because did you hear that, like, you know, that they owed Calvin Johnson like a couple of million dollars, and they only just settled that like 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh my god!
And
really?
Like, yeah, and he refused to go back to like being the Ring of Honor because they like owed him like a bunch of money, and then they finally paid him, and they came back, and then Dan Campbell comes, and they start winning again.
Oh my god! Yeah, it just seems that I don't know. Like every single year, we have to appreciate just what Dan Campbell has done for that franchise because they were fucking losers.
They were.
They lost all the time. They were a historically terrible team that squandered talented players.
0-16, the worst.
Just as bad as it gets.
That's why Stafford was there. They went 0-16 and had the first pick and took him.
And then fucked him at every possible step. And then the ultimate fucking of Matt Stafford was the moment that he leaves, they decide to be a serious franchise.
I mean, yeah, a lot went into that. They got all of the Rams draft picks, and then they got their assistant GM or whatever the guy was too. I see who, how, like, they like, he, I mean, it's the only way Detroit were ever going to be a good franchise is they had to do what they did and then just hit almost every fucking pick in the draft they could.
And that hard reset was the perfect thing for them to do.
It was perfect. But then they reset in a way where, like, they still had a solid quarterback. They weren't going to suck. Like, they had Jared Goff, who went to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and had like his draft stock was at an all time low because he just had a very public falling out with Sean McVay.
Yeah.
So like, Sean McVay basically said, "I don't think I can win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff."
Yeah.
Which is brutal.
And crazy, but also could be true.
I mean, Sean McVay's pretty smart when it comes to football.
I guess we're really going to see in the next 2 or 3 years because they're going to be in some big playoff games.
I think that they're the favorite coming out of the NFC.
Oh, 100%. Like, because the 49ers are nowhere.
I mean, they're getting healthier.
They're getting healthier, but like,
I don't see... That doesn't scream Super Bowl to me.
No, and then the NFC East is... Wow, that's an interesting division to say the least.
Yeah, I mean... Of course, like everyone predicted, the fucking Commanders are going to win it.
But then also, like, Nick Sirianni can coach again because the Eagles blew out the Bengals. And I know the Bengals, they still have Joe Burrow. But yeah, then...
Part of me thinks that this is sort of an oasis in the desert, though.
Mm.
Like, because they've versed a couple of bad defenses. They've got the ball rolling. Jalen's looking like Jalen a little bit more. You know, having A.J. Brown back has made a huge difference to him. Because Jalen Hurts throws a real pretty sort of lollipop moon ball. Throws a beautiful lollipop moon ball. And, you know, giving him a elite target to go to is always going to help help that sort of efficiency, especially when A.J. Brown is a go-route machine.
Yeah.
But I still don't know what they're going to look like against good defenses, and I don't know if we're going to see that again this year.
I think it's tough. I think the Eagles have all of the tools. They have all the tools. They have all the players in the right positions. They have the D-line, they have the O-line, they have the secondary, they have... I don't know much about their linebackers, but I don't know. They do have, they have a white cornerback, so that might be their, you know, maybe they're not making all the best decisions. But
they do have end racism in the end zone.
I said it most of the teams, and that's working. So is it? Anyway. Okay, that's a podcast, Matt. Stop, you know, they can't see you do all those signs and facial expressions. God damn.
That's the intention.
I know, okay, all right. But you could support somebody when they're making risky statements on air with a live microphone. That's all right. No, there's 7 people listened to the last one. We're fine. And I imagine 3 of them got to this far in. Thanks, Mum. Anyway. The Eagles, I don't know, man. This just came to me. We're gonna wrap up here. We've talked about the NFC enough. We've talked enough, but we're pretty much like at the exact halfway point of the season.
Yeah. Halfway through that game.
Would you feel abridged, Matt, if I put you on the spot here a little bit to make a prediction? I'll give you time. Do you want to predict who our Super Bowl matchup's going to be at the midpoint of the season?
At the midpoint of the season so far, just looking at records, momentum,
yep.
Team build.
Yeah.
I think that we're looking at a Chiefs Lions Super Bowl. I think that the Ravens are probably going to make it through to the AFC Championship game. They're going to be going to Arrowhead. And I think that it's going to be a little bit too overwhelming. And I think that Playoff Patty's going to do what Playoff Patty does.
Yeah.
And there is no shame in losing to Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. A lot of the best have.
3 years in a fucking row. That's the safe pick. I think that was the preseason pick for most people would pick in, like, Lions,
yeah,
Chiefs.
And just both teams are living up to the hype.
I'm going to...
If anything higher, that, like, I didn't have that higher hope for the Lions. I was originally thinking, like, the most logical was going to be a Super Bowl rematch. Like... Because I still thought the Niners had all the pieces, and I thought the Chiefs still had all the pieces. But the Lions look like the best team in the NFC right now.
This is my prediction. I'm gonna go. I'm not gonna just. I'm gonna explain how they get there.
Okay.
Because I'm not going safe. I'm not going Lions Chiefs.
Oh, you know what? I really hope that you're throwing a Hail Mary that lands.
So this is what I think. This is what I think. I think the Lions and Chiefs are gonna be your one seeds regardless.
Yep.
I think they're gonna be your number one seeds in the NFC and AFC. So I think that's how that's gonna work out. I think the Lions should go through to the Super Bowl as long as they don't run into their playoff kryptonite, which is going to be the Green Bay Packers. I think they're going to knock him out in the divisional round. And then I think the Packers are then going to play the Eagles in the AFC Championship, and the Eagles are going to go to the Super Bowl.
You think it's going to be I'm picking early.
I think the Eagles are going to finish strong. Narrowly pip the Commanders for the division. Commanders are going to go through the wild card. Eagles will finish third or fourth seed.
Ooh.
And then they're going to knock off the 49ers in their divisional round. Because the 49ers are then going to ride the ship and probably win the NFC West. I think that's the most likely thing.
I think that's the safe bet, but I'm not right now. Like, I can't ride off the Rams. And
yeah.
The Rams,
and when they get in the playoffs, they're going to be tough.
They're tough. Always a tough out, man.
And now to the AFC. Again, Chiefs are going to be the one seed going to the playoffs.
Yep.
Ravens will be, I'm going to guess, maybe the 3 seed. Depending, them or the Bills will be the 2 seed. I'm picking the Buffalo Bills.
You're picking the Bills? You think the Bills are going to knock off the Chiefs?
I don't want to pick the Ravens because I'm going to be... I think the Bills and the Ravens will meet each other in a divisional round. And the Ravens are going to win, but I think for this prediction, I'm going to say the Bills are just because, you know, and I think the other divisional matchup, it's going to come from the 7th seed New York Jets, who are going to knock off the Kansas City Chiefs and then play the Bills in the AFC Championship. And the Bills are going to beat them.
You know, that is a bold prediction. Wow, I don't quite know what there are a lot of...
Yep.
There are a lot of interesting dominoes that have to fall there.
And we are going to discuss none of them right now. See you guys next week. I'm Matt.
I'm Matt.
And we'll, bye.